Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Zayin. We are a little bit up on the bottom of Vav Amud Beis at the two dots. And remember that we were going through the different Rishuyot of Shabbat, based around the bright of Arba Rishuyot of Shabbat. And we've already discovered that really there are secrets hiding there between the lines in which the Arba Rishuyos yield more than arba different dinim, because we have combinations of dinim by the introduction of the concept of diurin. The concept of diurin appeared initially, we're going to have more of it today, concept of diurin appeared as a new element that the Rabbanan introduced into recognizing the meaning of the Rishuyot by saying that actually Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim imply in people's mind the question of who lives there. How many people live there? How many people use the Rishuyot? Now, in reality, that's totally irrelevant other than in terms of the Rabim being sufficient to describe Rishus or Rabim as a Rishus, but it has nothing to do with the Mechitzas. Once you've got Mechitzas, it doesn't matter whether a million people inside of those Mechitzas, it doesn't matter whether you have a million different homes inside the same Mechitzas going around this town, let's say, it would all be one Rishut. However, the Rabbanan introduced a new concept of different types of Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachids. Today we're going to learn that they also introduced an issue of a non-diurin Rishut HaYachid, which they refused to allow you to treat as a full Rishut HaYachid for the very fact that nobody lives there, a completely new extension. So that yields us really six different issues that come out of the Arba Rishuyos. As I mentioned yesterday, the Rashba is concerned, why do we say there's only Arba Rishuyos? And explains that because the others are conglomerations of dinim, and in fact have a real dinim of the Rishus HaYachid Yoraita, we certainly don't want to give them a shame bifnei atzma. That's my elaboration, by the way, a little bit on the Rashba. He doesn't say the part about not wanting to give them a name bifnei atzma. Anyway, let's get to the Gemara at the two dots. Okay, so you said before something that was very confusing. You said that if you're talking about a yam, a sea, or a valley, or an istavnit, now those istavnit, remember, that was the area that is used in front of the stores. So those are basically what they would have over there is tall poles that you would be able to hang things off of, merchandise off of. And then they would have like a chest or something that you could store things in and that the guy would sit on, the seller would sit on, or he would use as a counter. And these things would be expanded during business hours. So, and a carmelite. What do you mean, and a carmelite? These are carmelites. You're coming to define carmelite. What do you mean, and a carmelite? That is what we're going to be concerning ourselves with today. And non-lokrishut ha-yachid v'lokrishut ha-rabbi. So my first issue is, how could you say that a valley is neither a Rishut HaYachid nor a Rishut HaRabim? And what about the Mishnah that contrasts the dinim of Tuma with these dinim? This is the Mishnah in Tyrus, in which we understand this concept called Safek Tuma Rishut HaRabim and Safek Tuma Rishut HaYachid. What defines Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid in terms of Tuma? Well, since it's learned out of Sota, what defines it is the number of people present, which is exactly what defines the stira of the Sota and gives her din of a Sota. And therefore, the issues are totally different. There, it has nothing to do with Mechitzot in Tyrus. It only has to do with the number of people present. Whereas in Shabbos, Mikra Din, it only has to do with the Mechitzot and has nothing to do with the number of people present. So, we have a Mishnah that actually contrasts the two. So if you've got a valley, be a motachama, now during the summertime, where nothing is planted, and Yoshua, when he gave Eretz Yisrael out, Alpia Goral, he made a tnai, which Gemara defines Baba Kama, he made a tnai, made 10 tnai, but one of them was that no one is allowed to bar trespassers from their fields during the summertime, which will allow people to cut through, because there's nothing growing anyway. And therefore, since people will walk there, when it comes to the dinim of Tuma Rishut HaRabim, it's Rishut HaRabim because there's always people walking. Masha'enke bimot hachama for Shabbos, a bika is called a Rishut HaYachid, which doesn't make any sense, but we'll talk about it. But how could you say that a bika is a carmelite? Here it says it's a Rishut HaYachid. it's Rishut Rabin Latuma. And Bimot HaGeshamim, where there are no people that are going to be walking there, then it's Rishut HaYachid, both for Shabbat and for Tumah V'Tayra. So Ula says, for heaven's sakes, look at the context. The context is that we're simply trying to contrast the din of the definition of Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid between Shabbos and Tumah, correct? Well, there ain't no thing called a Karmelit for Tumah. So if you're going to contrast it, you can only contrast it in black and white terms. Therefore, what it says is, listen, as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's a Rishut HaYachid, meaning that it's really a Karmelit, but since it's not a Rishut HaRabim, it's closer to the dinim of Rishut HaYachid. So vis-a-vis the contrast to, in the Mishnah in Tyrus, to the dinim of Tumah V'Tayra, we call it a Rishut HaYachid. It's perfectly fair, even though it's very inaccurate. So my kari la Rishut HaYachid, because it's not a Rishut HaRabim. So it fits the juxtaposition. Rav Ashi says, you know, that's sort of a weird shot. You call it a Rishut HaYachid, but it's really a Karmelit? No, you know what? It's got to be talking about a bik'ah that is surrounded by a fence to prevent trespassers. So then why isn't it Rishut HaYachid? And here is where we are introduced to our sixth effective Rishus. And this is because of a new halacha. The Omer Ula Omer Rabbi Yochanan. And this is called a Rishus always, even if it isn't literally that, but this is its name. A karfaf yoter mi beit sataim shelo hukaf lidira. So if you have an area that is a large garden, let's say, and it is so large that it is big enough that people look at it as this very, very wide area, so it's the size of two beit sa'ah. Now, two beit sa'ah is quite large because it's talking about 50 amas by 100 amas, technically speaking. This is what we learn out of the Mishkan, right? Which is, that's 5,000 amas, square amas, right? That's a big area. Once it's that big, if it's a yard around the house, okay, then it's obviously part of Rishut HaYachid. But this is an area that had no house attached to it. You didn't go from your house to the middle of nowhere. And therefore, even though you may have it as a private garden, that technically speaking is Rishut HaYachid because it's totally surrounded by a mechitza, it is considered to be a Rishus that is not a true Rishut HaYachid, and we give it a din of a Karmelit vis-a-vis the halach of whether you're allowed to carry within it. And the din is over there that even no matter how big it gets, afilu kuraim, it's still going to retain its diaraisa of Rishus HaYachid, and therefore if you throw something into it from Rishus HaRabim, you're going to be chayav because it is a mechitza. But you're not allowed to carry within it more than arba ames. Therefore, we answer it as if it were a Karmelit. This is a very confusing use of the word Karmelit that people sometimes use for it, because normally a Karmelit is a mokum p'tur that the Rabbanan have been machmir on. But this is a Rishus HaYachid midiraisa. Therefore, do not confuse it with the Karmelit that if you threw from here into Rishus HaRabim, you'd be punter. You threw from here to Shizrabi, you'd be absolutely chayav. But since it doesn't have anyone living in it, it has resemblances to a open area, and therefore we gave it a din of a Rishus HaRabim, at least in terms of not being allowed to carry more than four amas. So now we've got two explanations of that extra word, Karmelit. It could mean it's called Karmelit, even though it's really Rishut HaYachid, and in terms of over the contrast. But it really is a Karmelit because basically it's not surrounded by anything. And then we have the other approach in which it's really surrounded by mechitzas and it has a chumrah of a Karmelit. So I understand why Rav Ashi didn't want to say what Ula said. I mean, to call a Rishus HaYachid when it's not a Rishus HaYachid because it's not a Rishus HaRabim seems to him to be a little bit off the wall. Whereas Ula was the very person who introduced the mimer of Rabbi Yochanan about a karfaf yoter mibeit sataim. Why didn't he want to say that here's a remez in the Braita to this new aloha? So why didn't he say kishmaita? Says Ula, because I never heard anybody call a bika when it is a karfaf. It never would have been called a bika. Bika always means an open area. So don't give me that stuff. It's surrounded by mechitza. It's very misleading. Much more misleading than my pshat, because contextually, my pshat makes a lot of sense. It's only coming to contrast the dinim of the Tyrus to Shabbos. Ravashi says, okay, but I mean, you can't call something that is a karmelit a Rishut HaYachid. It says Rishut HaYachid, and that means, by definition, it's got to have mechitzas. So I understand it's a little iffy to call a bika, a karfaf, a bika. Okay, so both of these pshatim are not really good pshatim because they don't explain the language well. You've got to choose which one is more outrageous. Okay, continuing on. Now, so what we had over there, we had this additional word of veha karmelit. Now, what is veha karmelit? They were all karmelit. We were coming to give you examples of karmelit. So how do you use an example of a karmelit and you call it, oh, and there's also the karmelit, which is a good example of a karmelit. I mean, my God, what is that supposed to mean? Ki aser of dimi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, what this is coming to say is a case of a keren zavit has mucha l'rishut harabim. The avagav de zimne de dach ke rabim v'aylel l'gava, kime de lo necha tashmishtei ki karmelit dami. Now, we introduced this concept yesterday, and in fact, this is a very important piece of Gemara because it leads to profound machlokasin about the classic definition of a rishut hayachid. Remember, yesterday we met the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that midiraita, even two mechitzas, makes something into a rishut hayachid, despite the fact that baki beirabim, except in the case, of course, of pasei beiraot. I'm bringing all this up just to get you used to the special terminology that we learned a lot of yesterday. What is the din according to Rabbanan who argued with Rabbi Yehuda? So remember, the Gemara made it very clear that they hold you would actually be chayav midiraisa if you threw from one of your homes on either side of that Rishus Rabim into Rishus Rabim, even though there's from Rishus Rabim into Rishus Rabim, even though there's two walls, which makes it clear that they hold that two walls is fully Rishut HaRabim. Okay, that's our first machloket. Now, the question is, do you need four mechitzot, or is even three mechitzot considered to be a Rishut HaYachid? Now, this is a big machloket we've shown, and we're going to tell you the unique approach of the Rambam, which is incredibly brilliant. But basically, there's a machlokas whether three mechitzot is a Rishus HaRabim or not. That machlokas, is a Rishut HaYachid or not. So that machlokas leads to two very different approaches in this Gemara, in the case, just in defining the case. The simple way of defining the case, which we spoke about yesterday, is where someone who obviously doesn't want his house to be directly on the street, he puts up a fence or he puts up a hedges or something. Now, if that fence collapses or the hedges collapse, all of a sudden there is an area that has three mechitzot that people can pull their car into and park until he calls the cops to get them out in his area because it's straight off the street. So now somebody who needs to go around, or maybe there's a car in the way and he wants to go around the side of the car, pull into his yard and go around because his hedge fell down. Now, that's a simple reading of a Keren Zavis HaSmuch L'Rishus HaRabim. It is not a convenient use for the Rabim. Obviously, most drivers and most walkers are going to keep walking straight. They have no interest in taking extra space to be going into this guy's yard. Nonetheless, it's open to Rishus HaRabim. If there's a lot of traffic, people will be pushed into there. And therefore, we cannot call it a normal Rishus HaRabim. But what we say over here is that even though Zimnin go in, Zimnin to Daki Barabim, Zimnin people, sometimes people will go in, it's not called part of the Rishus HaRabim. Now, obviously, if three walls make it Rishus HaYachid, then by definition, it's not called part of Rishus HaRabim. So what this seems to be saying is that the only problem with it that makes it not a Rishus HaRabim Gomor is that its usage is inconvenient and therefore you can't call it a thoroughfare. But if it would be just the fact that it had three walls, that would be not enough to give it a din of Rishus HaYachid. Because of that, others learn that the meaning is this. The guy had a hedge or a wall or perhaps the edge of his house had been at an angle to the Rishus HaRabim, and the edge of the wall, imagine a case where the edge of the wall of his house is right at the Rishus HaRabim, And then he had two small yard areas coming off of that edge to either end of the neighbor's wall, right? So that he had two walls because it was a triangle. At this point, the third wall originally had a hedge there. So he had a private yard, which was shaped like a triangle. Now, the hedge collapsed or the wall collapsed. What do you have now? You have two walls, one of whose sides is the Rishus HaRabim. Since you only have two walls and we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, it's definitely not a Rishus HaYochid. So why is it not a Rishus HaRabim? Because it's not convenient to use and people are not going to actually go into that Rishus straight. And therefore, we give it this new din of a Carmelite. Now, remember that we've already had a number of different examples of this type of things. We were talking about Sidei Rishus HaRabim. We were talking about the Istavnit before. They all share this same issue. Mechitza-wise, they could be Rishus HaRabim because they lack mechitzas. The problem is they're not really called the Rishus HaRabim because it is very inconvenient to use. Now, we're going to see that there are different levels of inconvenience as we go through this sugya, which lead to different halachas, because convenient use is part of our definition of Rishus HaRabim. The Rambam, however, learns like this, even though most people are not aware of what the Rambam is really saying. As the Orach HaShulchan goes through the entire Rambam, every place that he talks about this, and brings out so beautifully what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam says that the number of walls is actually not a given. The number of walls itself is a function of how protective the walls are. Therefore, the Rambam holds, in the case that we just learned, where your hedge collapsed, what that did is it stripped your rishus totally open directly to a road. And when the road is at the edge of your property, the three walls are not viewed as protective at all. But suppose the side that collapsed would have been facing the outdoors and the road was on the other side of your house. What would be the din of the area that would be surrounded by three mechitzas then? That would be a total Rishut HaYachid, according to Rambam, in which case if you threw from that area out to the road on the other side, you would be chayav. And therefore, he introduces a completely new idea, which explains so many Gemaras so beautifully and answers all of the questions that everybody asks at him, that it's really a wonderful, wonderful sugya to see. So I can't resist mentioning it over here. So we really have many different approaches. Some hold in the Gemara two mechitzas. Some Rishonim hold three mechitzas. Some hold four mechitzas. And some hold like the Rambam. It depends. Either three or four, depending on whether you have stripped to the Rishus HaRabim. And what did you want to say? I can't read, Rabbanei. So if you're trying to say something and you feel it's important, please mention it. Okay, so I guess it's not important. Anyway.
The term that Rebbe used in the past was restricted flow versus angle.
No. That's not the Rambam restricted flow. That's the din bichlal of all of these three cases that we're going to have of restricted flow. We haven't gotten into the contrast of restricted flow. Fine. Okay, thank you, Rebbe Arneil. Now, so this was one approach that we have. Rabbi Yochanan said, we're talking about a Karen Zavis, Smuchel Rishus HaRabim, and even though technically speaking that may be Rishus HaRabim, and again, depending how you learn, it either had two mechitzas left, three mechitzas left, this is a Carmelite because it's Lo Necha Tashmishte, and because of that, we gave it a halacha of a Chumrah, like a Carmelite. So it's not considered to be Mamish Rishus HaRabim. So, what is actually the din of this halacha? They gave it a din of a Carmelite, which means you would not be able to pass from it into the Rishus HaRabim. The question is, what din does it have? Midiraita? Now that would already be an issue of the Machlokas. It could be a Mokum Ptur, or it could be actually a Rishus HaRabim. Ask the Gemara. The other approach, which was also claimed to be Rabbi Yochanan, but this one was from Rav Dimi, that what it's talking about over here, adding with the word Ben HaKarmelit, is literally in smack bang in the middle of the Rishus HaRabim, and this is where we get to the concept of restricted flow. So what it's happening over here is that there are areas, which you may have noticed in American shopping malls, where they put little booths in the middle of the walkways instead of having a store on the side. This is where all the Israeli kids go to work in the American malls, you know, because they've got the chutzpah to yell to people that are walking by. So what they would do over there, they would put up amudim. And this would be in the middle of the piazza. So they would put up amudim, tall poles, which had hooks on them. And then during working hours, you would hang all types of merchandise on the hook. If you're selling umbrellas, if you went from one hook to the other hook, if you're making like a table. And then there would be little places for the sellers to sit and so on. Now, that's really not enough. It has no mechitzas. It's not enough to be considered a Rishus HaYochid, obviously. But what it does is it impedes the flow of traffic. Why? Because they're never made in such a way that you have a straight line between them. They are bedafka put in such a way as to force the public to stop and to move around them, and that way they get a chance to get a sucker to buy their stuff. Whereas if they had straight walkways between them, people would just run and not even look to the side. Since the whole purpose of it is restricted flow, you can't call it a Rishus HaRabim, and therefore it has a din of a Carmelite, because even though Darsi Barabim, Lamaisa, the public does not stop. They keep walking, and even if the people are screaming, hey, watch where you're going, they're going to keep walking, but they're not able to go straight. And therefore, that too has a din of a Carmelite. Rabbi Zeira brings out another type of din like this, namely the Itztaba Shelifnei HaAmudim is also a Carmelite. So this gives us four different examples of cases, because the Itztaba Shelifnei HaAmudim, even though on the surface it seems to be precisely the case that we had before of the Itztavnit, it's not, because the Itztavnit has the poles blocking traffic on the side away from the storefront. Masha Inken over here, the Itztaba Lifnei HaAmudim, that's talking about where you've got these places to put out a counter of stuff, and it's in front of the poles, so that the area behind you was the Itztavnit, and the area in front is really the Rishus HaRabim, and you're the real chutzpah is that you're breaking the flow of traffic to force people to look at your merchandise in the middle of the street, right next to the sidewalk, so to speak, right? Even that is considered to be a Carmelite as well. So now we've got four different cases. Let's take a look at some of the relationships between them. According to the Man D'Yoma, that introduced the idea of Bein Ha'amudim, which was the restricted flow in the middle, obviously, he would hold of this case of Rabbi Zeira that an Itztaba Shelifnei HaAmudim for sure is considered a Carmelite. It's not smack bang in the middle of the street, and therefore it's much easier to restrict the flow of the people. However, Rabbi Zeira, who was quoting Rabbi Yehuda, saying only case that he could come with us up with as a Carmelite was the case of an Itztaba. Okay, an Itztaba really blocks the traffic totally. I mean, you can't, you're going to have to move out of the way back into the street. Masha Enkin, Beina Amudim, it doesn't block the traffic totally. It just slows you down. So that is Necha Tashmisht in comparison to the Itztaba. It's easier to use that space. And therefore, it retains its din of Rishut HaRabim. Lishna Achrina, there's another difference that Beina Amudim, if you say that the Itztaba is a Carmelite, Beina Amudim is not. Why? Not because it doesn't block the space, but because sometimes if there's a lot of traffic, people don't care, and they're just going to push their way through. And Zinei D'Darsi Bei Rabim, and because of that, it's considered to be a Rishus HaRabim, because you can't really stop the traffic when it's heavy. Masha Inken, the Itztaba, is very difficult to move. People, there's nothing much they can do. Omar Rabba Bar Shila, Omar Rav Chista. Leveina Zekufa, Rishut HaRabim. Now, there are other things that will constitute something that is not part of the Rishut HaRabim, even though it's in the Rishut HaRabim. So let's say that you take a brick. Now, a brick has a definition, as we'll see. At Levena, Stam Levena is 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim. That's how wide it is and how long it is. It's a square. How thick it is depends on the quality of the brick. So it's more like a tile, more like our tiles. They made their bricks this way, even for building walls. But sometimes they would use the half brick, which is very similar to our brick. In any event, that is a very convenient size to indicate a halacha. Why? Because the din is, as I'm sure you remember from your sukkah and so on, that anything that is within three tvachim of something else is considered to be lavut. For all terms, that is the plank distance in the halacha. So as long as something is within three tvachim of something else, we don't see it as a separate area. There is no quantified and quantized rishus that is less than three tvachim apart from something else. The levena, therefore, is a beautiful example. If you put it up on its end, so what you have is, you have a surface that is 3 by 3, and something that is 3 by 3, whenever anything will land on its upended end. How can something land on its upended end? It's sticky. Remember, we had the case before. So you took a sticky fig, and it lands on this area. It's considered to be on the ground, because it's within three tvachim of the ground by definition of the word levena, which is always a maximum of three tvachim, but you can't, unless you're on top of it, on the edge, you will not be more than three tvachim. On the other hand, if it lands on top of the levena, on the edge of the levena that you set up, oh, now you got an interesting situation. Because you have something that is higher than three tvachim, so it's three tvachim and up, it's no longer on the ground. Okay, what is it? Well, the din is that if something is not a reshus that is choshev bifnei atzmo, what makes something a reshus choshev bifnei atzmo? Also, the din of 4 by 4 tvachim. That is considered to be an area that is choshev. Could it really be a full reshus? No, because it needs to be 10 tvachim in order to be a full reshus. However, it now takes on a new personality. So if it would be 4 by 4, less than 10 tvachim, and therefore not yet a reshut hayachid, because it's not high enough to be a reshut hayachid, that's a karmelit. If it's less than 4 by 4, but it's higher than 3 tvachim off of the ground, and therefore not part of the ground, that's a mokum ptur. Now, the only time it would not be a mokum ptur is where we get into the convenience issue again, and this is what we're starting to talk about now. If something is positioned in such a way that it has a convenient access to B'nai Rishus Arabim, then even though it may look like a Makom Ptur, because of the ease of use with which people in Rishus Arabim will put down a backpack on it, as a matter of fact, sometimes there's a din of a specific height of 9 tvachim, which is good for adjusting backpacks, which we're going to talk about later. And everybody that walks by goes over to this thing, puts their backpack down on it, and gets readjusted. That is bedavka, a special case where it's literally part of the Rishus HaRabim, because it's part of the usage of Rishus HaRabim. So don't jump to a conclusion that something is going to be either a Mokum Ptur or a Karmelit, just because it seems to be somehow mechalic an area to itself. So therefore, comes along Rabbi Bar Shila, you put up a Levena, you threw something that stuck to it, you'd be chayev if it landed 4 amas away from where you threw it, because you just transferred something 4 amas in a Rishus HaRabim. However, if it lands on top of the brick, then you would be punter, because the top of the brick is higher than 3 amas, and because of that, you would actually not possibly be mechayev because it didn't land on the ground. And the top of the brick is a mokum ptur because it's only 3 tvachim wide. And therefore, there would be no problem. We don't really know how wide it is, because the way I understand the Gemara, I mean, there are others who understand it differently. I don't believe it. And we don't know precisely how wide it is, but it's obviously not going to be thicker than the 3 by 3 of the actual levena itself. So, as far as what you just said, this is true only if it's a normal brick. It has to be 3 tvachim high. We're over there. This is the reason, because since it's 3 tvachim high, it's not on the ground. But it's not on the ground. Remember, it has to take into consideration convenience of use. So suppose you had an area that was convenient, that was 3 tvachim high, and everybody's stepping on it, so then it would become part of the Rishus HaRabim. So over here, since by definition, it's 3 tvachim high, is too hard for people to step on, they'll step over it, lo darsi bo rabim. But suppose it lands on a thorn bush. Over there, it doesn't need to be 3 tvachim high, because people don't like getting thorns in their feet, and therefore, it's not a place where people will be happy to walk on. Says Chiya Barav, no. I mean, many people are wearing shoes or sandals. They don't care if there's a few thorns there. But I'll tell you one thing they don't want to step into, and that's a pile of tzoha. They certainly don't want to step into that. And so even if they're wearing shoes, everybody is going to move out of the way. And therefore, if your ball lands on a cow patty, it would not be chayev, because it's not considered to be mechubar lekarka, because in that case, it's not in the Rishus HaRabim. Rav Ashi says, even if it's a pile of tzoha, it doesn't matter. You would still be chayev because I don't care. It's bottled to the ground. It doesn't matter to me whether people like walking there or not. It is part of Rishus HaRabim. It's not an area that's b'chalek Rishus La'atzma. Omer Rabba Bar Rav Shila, it should say, I believe. Kiyata Rav Dimi Omer Rav Yochanan. Look, the rule is a karmelit cannot be less than 4x4 tvachim because it has to have a chash Rishus to itself, and that requires 4x4. And furthermore, Vamar of Sheshes, furthermore, it only gets to the height of 10 tvachim. Now, the simple meaning of this is, obviously, as we're going to come out in the end, we're going to examine other possibilities, is that once it would be 4x4 and 10 tvachim high, it would be a Rishus HaYochid and not a Karmelit. So the point really that's being made over here is that if it's 4x4, it can be a Karmelit as long as it's higher than 3 tvachim and lower than 10 tvachim. If it's less than 4x4, then it will be a Mokum Ptur. If it's 4x4 and it's more than Atzara Tvachim, then it becomes Rishus HaYochid. So now we've got all of the cases clear, I hope. Okay, we see the definition of Mechitzas. We see the definitions of usage. We see the definitions of diurin. We see the definitions of free-flowing traffic. We've introduced a lot of new issues that are going to define for us what actually becomes 6 different types of Rishuyas. When you say it goes up to 10 tvachim, what exactly do you mean? I mean, are you trying to say that only if you have a mechitza of 10 tvachim, that makes it a karmelis? And it's not a karmelis? Is that true? That's ridiculous. I mean, we know absolutely that's not true. Imagine a case like this. Omer of Gidol, Omer of Chiya Bar Yosef, Omer Rab. Suppose you have a house. Now, this house does not have a 10 tvachim height internally. It only is 9 tvachim, but it's got a roof that's an additional tefach high. So the thickness of the roof, which is called keruyo, that is mashlim, the 10 tvachim. Now, if you're standing on top of this little house, so then you're on a Rishus HaYochid, because underneath you, you're 10 tvachim up, and those mechitzas are considered to be 10 tvachim high, vis-a-vis the roof. So there, it's a real Rishus HaYochid you could carry across the entire block, and there's no limits to how much you can carry. But inside that house, you're only allowed to carry up to 4 amas because it's a karmelit. So you see from there that even though it does not have a din of mechitzas, that it's clearly considered to be a karmelit. This is your best example because we're talking about something that bedavka doesn't have a din of karmelit. So therefore, when it says tofeset ad asara, what it means is that up to asara, it's a karmelit. But lamala me'asara tvachim, it's no longer a karmelit, and it would at that point, it would become a Rishut HaYachid. If it's less than 4x4, so then it would be a Mokum Ptur. Now, we have a proof that that's true. Kiyodeh Amalei Shmuel Rav Yehuda. Shinana, I do not want you to start bothering me and talking about anything on Shabbos that is more than 10 tvachim from the ground level. What do you mean? What do you mean is nothing? You certainly can't say there's no dinner for Rishut HaYachid L'mala Me'asara. That's not true. Because we already had the case earlier, and that was a case we discussed, where somebody threw something from, he sticks a basketball, he's playing basketball, he sticks a pole into the ground, and then somebody threw something from Rishus HaRabim, and it landed on top of that pole. That the din is, even if that pole is 100 amas high, the guy who threw onto that pole from Rishus HaRabim would be chayav. Because it's still in the Rishus HaYochid. The Rishus HaYochid continues up all the way up to space. So you can't tell me that Shmuel is trying to say there's no din of Lamala Me'asara in Rishus HaYochid. That's nuts. By the way, how would you be chayiv if there's no Mokum Arba Al Arba to land on because there was no Hanacha? I'm sorry to do this to you guys, but we need to be tovel in the yam here of these concepts in order for you to feel that you're able to swim in it. So just these few dapim. This will give you all of the yesodis that you need for all of the dinim of the Masechet of the Rishuyot. It's worth this little bit of extra time and extra complexity, and I'm bedafka making you swim through the concepts in order to feel comfortable. I'm not just doing this to, you know, make things appear complicated. This is one of the most difficult kind of things to get straight. It's got so many variables. Let's get used to the variables, and then we'll see, as usual, that everything becomes very simple in the end. Okay, so the idea that Rishus HaRabim is not Lamala Mi'asar, well, obviously that's true. I don't need Shmuel to tell him that. It says Beferish in the Mishnah. That's none. We're going to have a Mishnah later on in the Masechet, just a bit later, another 100 daf or so, where it says that you can imagine we're still going to be doing this in 100 daf. Look how much fun we have ahead of us. Now, Zorek Arba Amot Bakotel. You throw something in Rishus HaRabim, and it lands up against a wall, okay, which is going to turn out to be the case of something sticky. And now it's facing, it's in the Rishus HaRabim, it's the middle of the air. So if it landed on the wall above 10 tefachim from the ground, it's like in orbit. And you are not chai of putting something in orbit. There is no din of a Rishus once, of Rishus HaRabim, once it's Lamala Mi'asar. But if it lands Lamata Mi'asar Tvachim, if it's from 10 Tvachim of the ground, then it landed in Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, it's Kizorek Ba'aretz, it's as if it landed on the ground. Now, the question, of course, is how in the world did it land in any way, in any event? Now, there's two approaches to this. It landed because since it's not gravitationally attracted to the wall that it landed on, but it's molecularly attracted because it's sticky, we measure the arba al arba on the face of the wall. Okay? So, in other words, if you're talking about gravity, then you have to measure the area that is gravitationally attractive. It has to be 4x4. If you're measuring something that has landed because of molecular attraction, then you measure the area of that attraction has to be arba al arba. So you measure against the face of the wall. That's one approach. The reverse approach is that if something lands in a way that has nothing gravitationally that will prevent it from falling to the Rishus HaRabim between it and the Rishus HaRabim, and it's supported by something else, then for all intents and purposes, since it's roya p'nei hakarka, it's on the ground. And it has nothing to do with the size of the wall against which it lands, which is a completely different approach. The Ri doesn't like it. Since then the Gemara could have said about the Ani and the Balabayit, where we're talking about, well, how about a mokum arba al arba? According to this shot, why doesn't it just say that the guy holds it in such a way that it's facing the ground? That's something of a naive question, I think. Right, because I mean, obviously, if it's sticky, then it's then it is molecularly attracted to something. If, however, you're pinching it and you're holding it above the ground, that's not considered to be munach on the ground, because then the minute you let it go, you let it go. I mean, that's an act of volition, so it's really not much of a problem for the Riva. Alrighty, now getting back to Rav Dimi and Rav Sheshes. So it has to be four tefachim in order to be a carmelite. It has to only be, as Rav Sheshes adds, less than 10 tefachim high. Now you can get a clear sense of where these halachas come from. Because basically what's happening is that the Karmelit is partially a Rishut HaYachid and partially a Rishut HaRabim. So that Rav Dimi and Rav Sheshes were separately pointing out the relationships to these different Rishuyot. Since the entire concept of turning a mokum p'tur into a carmelite is a new idea, they gave it two kulot. Now, gentlemen, again, I must stress the use of the word carmelite to include the areas that are actually a d'oraisa, rishus hayochid, such as a karfaf shelo kafla dira, and all those other cases where we give it a din of a carmelite. You must not confuse that with a real carmelite. Because the Rabbanit cannot change a real Rishus HaYochid into a Carmelite, Lekula, and tell you that you'd be potter if you threw from that Carmelite to Rishut HaRabim. That's absurd. How would the Rabbanit be able to be Mekel? All they can do is take what was a Mokum Tur and give it a din of a Carmelite, and then it would be a Chumrah. And they would say you can't carry from it, neither to Rishus HaRabim nor Rishus HaYochid. Since they're creating, so to speak, out of whole cloth, this new Rishus called a Carmelite, By the way, I forgot to even discuss with you what the meaning of the word Carmelite is. Some learn that Carmelite, Rashi's approach to Carmelite, is that based on the pasuk of Ya'arov Carmelo, which means, according to Rashi, it means it's a type of forest. And the Carmelite is a forest that has very high trees, and therefore there's no undergrowth, and the trees are scattered in that forest, and it's very, very tall. Others learn the Carmelite, on the contrary, is more like a swamp, in which low reeds and low grasses will grow. And others yet learn Carmelite comes from the word like Carmel. Carmel, in terms of fruit, is car the mal, which is the marker of Carmel in English, which means it's something that is squishy and soft, and yet it's still held together like a car, like a pillow. So it's a Carmel. This is neither hard nor soft, therefore, that explanation. And it's partially Rishut HaYachid and partially Rishut HaRabbi. In any event, we finally get to the ways in which we learn out the dinim from Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabbi. So on the one hand, what we point out is that it has both the kulas of Rishut HaYachid and the kulas of Rishut HaRabbi. And it's a kula of Rishut HaYachid, and this is what Rav Dimi pointed out, is that only if it's Arba al Arba could it be a Carmelite, just like Rishut HaYachid. But if not, not. It would just be a Mokum Tur. And this is therefore easy to remember once you understand the mechanisms of what place gets a din of a Mokum Tur and what place gets a din of a Carmelite. On the other hand, we give it also a Kula, in that even though we're looking at it partially as Rishut HaYachid, you can't carry out of it from Rishut HaRabim, we give it the Kula of Rishut HaRabim, and that's what Reb Sheshes was pointing out, because Rishut HaRabim will not continue above a height of Asarat Tvachim, whereas a Rishut HaYachid will. So we gave the Carmelite. We said, well, once it's more than Tvachim, it's no longer a Carmelite, and it gets back to being a Mokum Tur, and therefore you would be able to carry to Rishut HaRabim. Okay, Gufa. Let's get back to this halacha. We had this strange case, and this is a brilliant, brilliant case. Rav Gittel Omer Rav Bar Yosef Omer Rav. Remember, talked before about this little house. When I say little, I mean low. It's a low house, and it does not have 10 tvachim between the floor and the roof. But outside, it has a total of 10 tvachim if you're on the roof, right? So, al-gago, we said you're allowed to carry as far as you want. Inside, ein metafilin, ela ba'arba amot. Now, dig this. And this opens up a whole new sugya of convenient usages. And here the issue is this. Suppose you dig out in the middle of the floor a sunken living room. And now you've got a place which is 4x4 tvachim and which does have 10 tvachim to the roof, but it's only a small area. The rest of the area around the edges is still not big enough to have 10 tvachim from floor to roof. Only your sunken little living room, which is about the size of a dollhouse, would be good as a real house. What's the din then? So if you're chokik arba al arba in the floor, and therefore you make it 10 tvachim high in that area, then you're allowed to carry in the entire house, not only in the sunken living room. Why? Because this is considered to be, all of the rest of the area is considered to be convenient usage for people in the living room, so to speak. And that is called, technically speaking, chorim. Chorim would include shelves, holes, windows, anything that you would put things on when you're standing in the house. Those things are not rishus la'atzmam. Those are usages of the house. And we're soon going to see that we have the same concept in a rishut rabim. So this is called chorei rishut hayachid. Chorei rishut hayachid are completely like a rishut hayachid, and therefore you can carry throughout the entire area. The intima, chorei rishut hayachid ki rishut hayachid amu, whereas Chorei Rishut HaRabim are a machlokes. Abaya says they have a din of Rishut HaRabim. Rava says they don't do not. Everyone has to be analyzed. Is it 4x4? Then it's a Carmelite. Is it less than 4x4? It would be a Mokum Patur. There's no rule. It's just holes in the wall, as far as I'm concerned, or locker space. Omele Rava La Abaya. Listen, how can you claim that Chorei Rishut HaRabim are like Rishut HaRabim, when we had immediately today, earlier, where Dimi, remember, said, the case of a Keren Zavit Asmuchal Rishut HaRabim, where the wall collapsed, remember? And now you've got that area. Why in the world is that a Carmelit? If, in effect, it's a good place to park, and if it's a good place to park, then it is essentially Chorei Rishut HaRabim, right? A driver will look at this as a lovely place to store a car. That's no different than having a shelf, which is a lovely place to put a cup of coffee. So what's wrong? Always keep these hand sterilizers if you're going to be touching your face. And Bedavka, sterilize your face. That's the place where you get more and more exposure. So it should be exactly the same according to you. It's just a large Chorei Rishut HaRabim. Those are called parking elevators. What's wrong with that? Answers Abaya. Hasam lo necha tashmishte. Hocha necha tashmishte. The easiest use is the one that we call the chor. To have a parking elevator is not an easy use. And therefore, it's not considered to be part of the Rishus Rabim. So again, over here, we're going to have different levels of how different people define ease of use. So we've introduced yet a new issue, which is the ease of use of an additional space. It's not. So before we had the case of somebody who throws Arba Amos in Rishus Rabim, and it ends up stuck against the wall. So it was sticky. If it's Lamala Me'asar Tvachim, we said it's like in the middle of the air, never lands. If it's Lamata Me'asara, then it would be Kizorik Ba'aretz. And we asked, how could it be Kizorik Ba'aretz if it never lands? It's above three Tvachim. So how could you be Chayev if there was no Hanacha? Now, Rabbi Yochanan said that it's talking about something sticky, like a nice, delicious, fat fig, which is very sticky and is going to stick to a wall and doesn't bounce. And because of that, it is Munach. Now, if there is a concept of Chorei Rishus HaRabim, then why in the world would Rabbi Yochanan have to say that it literally went onto a surface and it stuck there? I mean, that's not a normal case that somebody throws a sticky object. Why can't we say it's talking about anything at all that you threw, a pack of cigarettes, and you threw it in such a way that it landed in a little cubby hole in the edge of inside of the wall? And, well, I mean, what do you mean? I couldn't say that. That would be a Mokum Ptur. No, it wouldn't. Not according to you, because it would be Chorei Rishus HaRabim. And we'd have a simple explanation. Somebody throws a pen and it lands inside of a shelf that's under Rishus HaRabim in the wall. So then it wouldn't have a din of a Mokum Ptur. It would have a din of Rishus HaRabim. That's what you claim. So why do we need this whole discussion over here about it? Why don't we just say, you threw it. Look, mate, but sure, but hey, I don't care. It could be anything. It could be a wall, some kind of a pen or something. And it got into a hole. So Abaya says, look, you know, sometimes the issues are not halakhic issues. They're just norm, man, norm. I mean, come on, what are the chances that somebody throws a pack of cigarettes and it lands straight into a hole in the side of the wall and it doesn't bounce out? And remember, you're throwing it from four amas away. So, man, what a genius. You have total control over the velocity. It was going just fast enough to get into that hole and land. Boom. You know, I mean, look, you know, you could be Musk or something, but normal people can't do that kind of thing, right? So because of that, it would have bounced out. You never would have gotten into the hole. And therefore, we don't want to talk about a case like that because Shiny Tzorvachim Tzorvachim, it always bounces out. So Rabbi Yochanan said it. It's much easier to say it's talking about something sticky. Or I can also answer you, sometimes you would answer this answer, that because we are not talking about a wall that has any holes in it. Why not? I'll prove it to you, Mimai. Because look at the ratio. What was the case in the ratio? You throw something that's lamala me'asara tvachim as a din as if it landed in midair. Now, according to you, if we're going to say the case is no, it landed inside of a hole. Ha-ha. If we're talking about a kotel that has a hole in it, then why is it so that it would be like being in midair? It came here to be munach in that hole. And since that hole is 10 tvachim high, it should have a din of rishus hayochid, not a rishus harabim. I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me, no, it doesn't have a din of rishus hayochid because it's not 4x4. It's just a little hole. Why would you say it's a din of rishus hayochid? If you're going to try to tell me that the Mishnah is talking about a case where you don't have 4x4, didn't review it, to quote Reb Chiya saying, that even if you threw something into a hole but did not have 4x4 tefachim, and it lands into a small hole, and it's lamala mi'asara tefachim, we still have a major issue. This is a major issue that is discussed elsewhere in terms of the dinim of a mezuzah. What is the halacha if you have a weird kind of habit door? Is it chayev in a mezuzah or not? Now, in order to be chayev in a mezuzah, you need to have a square that is a sara tvachim high and four tvachim wide, which constitutes a petach. A habit door does not have a sara tvachim high because it's round, and by the time you get to the area that's round, you don't have a side that's 10. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir was mechayev habits in mezuzahs. Why? Because of a concept called chokakin lahashlim. Chokakin lahashlim means that if you have the outlines of a space, now you can draw something around that space. If it were not round, and you now went and you took something, you shaved away the sides of that habit door, something that only Saruman would think of. But anyway, so you went ahead and you shaved away the sides of that door. You would come out with a 10 tefachim high side. So that means we look at it as if that part is not in the way. Well, if that's true, the same thing is true of a hole in a wall that is itself arba tefachim. And therefore, if you could be chokakin lahashlim, those arba tefachim, then according to Rabbi Meir, who is Mechayev habits and mezuzahs, he would be Mechayev you over here as viewing it as Rishus HaYochid. And therefore, if you threw from the Rishus HaRabim into that thing, it would be landing in Rishus HaYochid, not landing in Rishus HaRabim. The Rabbanon hold in Chokik and Lashem, we have that. So therefore, I mean, obviously, we don't want to have a Mishnah that's going to be a Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Stam Mishnah would hold it, or Rabbi Meir. If it's going like Rabbi Meir, it would be Rishus HaYochid. So obviously, we're not talking about a case of a hole. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan was smart enough to say we're talking about something sticky and only something sticky. Ah, things are going to get far more interesting tomorrow. Because now we're going to have to start thinking about at what point do large containers become their own space? And when do they take on the space of the rishus in which they are in?